Welcome back, true crime fans. This is our new series kickoff. I understand that it has been delayed for a little bit, but we are not going to delay it anymore. You know, I've been pre-recording on the 11th, so by the time that you hear this, it'll be at a later date. But regardless, I hope you guys enjoy this series. Now, before we kick off into, you know, the main subject of this episode, I want to have people understand why I decided to go astray from people murdering each other, people raping each other, that type of thing. You hear that a lot more in true crime than people disappearing. I felt like there needed to be a specific series set out there to help investigate, whether it's bringing new light or, you know, trying to figure out answer to certain disappearances or all of them. You know, obviously I'm not a detective, I'm not a PI, or I'm not anywhere in that field, but as a true crime podcast covering a person's disappearance and bringing it out more into the light than what it already had been for each case is a lot more important, so a lot more people hear about it. I personally do believe in this case that in each episode, not a lot of people have heard any of these people that have disappeared. The only people that really had is the people within the community, the people that locally heard it, the people that, you know, knew each subject. So that's why I wanted to do a series where it's only about people disappearing, because these cases are really important. Helping to shed light brings, I don't want to say joy, but it brings some sort of hope that we're getting closer to the answer. Without further ado, I don't think any of these are going to actually have viewer's discretion advice on them, so regardless, let's just get into this. Like I said, if you haven't followed us on Facebook, go do so. We are currently After Dark Coast to Coast Killers. And if you haven't been notified on any episode, or you're new here and you want to be notified, it's so easy. Places like Spotify and other streaming apps like Anchor and Outkast and Apple, all you have to do is pretty much, you know, follow us, and it'll prompt you to either get notified or not notified. That it's that easy. So like I said, without wasting up our time with this episode, today's subject, we are going to be talking about Brandon Swanson. I'm using two different site sources, reliable site sources, I should say. I am not going to use Wiki. I'm going to try my best to not use Wiki for any of these episodes, because Wiki can give out false information because it's self-published. So regardless, the two websites that we are going to mainly do for this episode, and maybe different here and there, is the FBI website and Minnesota's Missing Persons website. You can go check both of them out. I may link websites like that in or on our Facebook page, but anyhow, let's talk about Brandon Swanson. This case right here is an interesting one. It's kind of close by. Yes, it's far away, but it's close by to my state. He was on his way home from a party, if I remember correctly. And then he crashed. He was still alive. He was still alive, but his parents were coming to get him and his car, and he just disappeared. and has not been found since. And to throw this out here for the Minnesota tip line, if you have any knowledge of anything that's new, you can contact the tip line at 507-694-1664. He vanished May 14th, 2009, age 19. At the time, he was 5'6", weighed 125 pounds, and he had blue eyes. According to an analyst by Rebecca Klein, a senior psychology major at the College of St. Benedict in St. Joseph, Minnesota, this was prepared in fall of 2010. Without further ado, let's just get into it. On May 14th, 2008, 19-year-old Brandon Swanson disappeared under mysterious circumstances from a rural area northeast of Marshall in southwestern Minnesota. Now, if you don't know anything about Minnesota, it's in the Midwest, but it's different. Yeah, you still got fields, you still got, you know, the normal Midwest life, but, you know, depending on where you go, it's typically either a city or a really small town. And it's really nice in Minnesota. Anyhow, numerous searches after he disappeared had been conducted of the area and the waters that surrounded the location where his car was found had also been searched. After nearly 3 years, those searches have not found anything, whether it was physical evidence or, you know, any sort of trace with that would lead to Brandon. With no body or very little evidence, we can only speculate on what happened to Brandon. That's because, like I said, it's just a bizarre way that he disappeared. You know, on May 13th of 2008, marked the last day of his classes at Minnesota West Community and Technical College in Canby, Minnesota. Brandon Swanson was enrolled in the wind turbine program at the time. He was leaving a friend's house in Lind, Minnesota, celebrating and consuming alcoholic beverages, but obviously, according to this article, it says it's not in excess, that, you know, so it's not like he was totally hungover the next morning type of thing, or he wasn't super drunk where he just stumbled and, you know, all that type of stuff. Shortly after midnight on May 14th, Brandon left Lind to head back to his parents' home in Marshall, where he lived. Around 12:30 a.m., Brandon's car went into the roadside ditch and he placed a call to his parents, asking them to pick him up. He described his location as being on a rural road outside Lind, about 10 miles from his parents' home. Brian and Annette, who are his parents, stayed on the phone with their son while they were driving to pick him up. They later reported that Brandon seemed certain of his whereabouts and he did not seem too disoriented. When Brian and Annette arrived to that same location described by their own son, Brandon nor his car were there. Brian began flashing the lights of his pickup truck and instructed Brandon to do the same. Neither party was able to see the other's flashing lights, and because of mounting frustration, an argument ensued. Brandon hung up on his mother, and when she called him back to apologize, he told his parents he was walking to Lind and would wait for them at his friend's house. Brian then drove, you know, them back home to Marshall so she could go to bed. And then he would drive back to Lind to pick up his son. Once again, this is very early morning. His father remained on the line with his son, who is walking towards town. This call began at 2:23 a.m. and would be the last contact between the father and the son. During the conversation, Brandon described his surroundings to his father. At one point, he stated he was walking along the fence line and could see the lights of town in the distance. At 3:10 a.m., Brandon shouted a curse word and the call ended abruptly. His father tried to call his son back several times, but Brandon never answered again. So this where things kind of pick up. There's really not much to summarize between then and, you know, at the point right now, but in short, it's something that doesn't seem normal. The whole time Brandon and Brian was on the phone together, and then something happened and the phone call ended. Do we know what happened? Will we ever know what happened? I don't know. But let's continue. The Swansons then contacted Brandon's friends and they searched surrounding rural areas for any signs of Brandon. The early morning search turned up nothing, and at 6:30 a.m. on May 14th, Annette Swanson contacted the Lyon County Sheriff's Department for assistance. At first, the authorities were reluctant to search because Brandon was legally an adult, and they pointed out to that it was not unusual for a 19-year-old to stay out all night. The authorities joined the search later that morning after realizing the seriousness of the situation. You would think that, when all this has happened to the point of something happening to somebody as a son, while on the phone, you would probably send out a search. And I get it. There's things that doesn't really call for a search, but then there's other things that obviously just don't seem right and need a search for adults. On the afternoon of May 14th, the authorities located Brandon's Chevy's Lumina by tracing cell phone calls to a tower northwest of Marshall. Brandon's vehicle was found in a rural area on the side of a field near the Lyon Lincoln County lines, about 1.5 miles north of Highway 68. Lyon County Sheriff Jeff Vizicki described the car as on sort of a sharp incline, nothing major but enough that the car would get hung up so the wheels are too high off the ground to get any traction. Brandon's vehicle was located approximately 25 miles from Lind, the town he erroneously thought he was outside of. Instead, Brandon was in the outskirts of the small towns Taunton and Porter, Minnesota, located about 20 miles northwest of Marshall, and Lind is about 10 miles south of Marshall. There were no alcohol or drugs found in the vehicle, nothing unusual. As they were investigating in or around the vehicle, there was no trace evidence that was significant, no signs of blood, no indication of a struggle. Unfortunately, along with that, when you're investigating a scene, you gotta look for footprints, and there was none found to indicate which way he would have went. So this is where the search now actually picks up for Brandon. After Brandon's car was located, the sheriff's department sought the help of search dogs. The dogs led authorities to the banks of the Yellow Medicine River, which at the time of the disappearance was high and flowing fast. The Yellow Medicine River is knee-deep in some areas and up to 15 feet deep in others, because whenever there's water involved, if you haven't, understood why sometimes their searches in water nearby. It's because, one, it was dark out, and two, it makes sense that a person, any type of person, could have fallen into a river. Brandon was assumed the same, and the search focused around the Yellow Medicine River and the surrounding area. However, this area had now been ruled out because if Brandon did fall into the river, his body would have been washed away downriver and eventually found. In the early weeks of the search in May and June 2008, land and air searches were conducted both by community volunteers and individuals from professional search organizations, but Brandon didn't, turn up. His body wasn't found. There was no other evidence. Everything was going cold. Numerous searches have been conducted since then, primarily relying on the time and effort of local volunteers. The most recent major search effort, according to the website, was conducted August 7th through 8th of 2010. I don't know if it's at the time of this article, but it says current searches are focusing on a specific area of Mud Creek, which is also located in the vicinity where Brandon's car was found. The focus of the search moved to this area after bloodhounds led searches there in March 2010. There's a blog out called The Search for Brandon Swanson, and according to this article, Jeff Hayes, who writes it, updates the blog with information on the search and believes Brandon's remains are still out there. We can actually quickly go look at that blog really fast. Let me go look this up. Let's see here. There we go. So it looks like the latest information that he has is from 2011. It's pretty detailed, to be honest. I use the same website. It's called Blogger. It's a really great website for all this sort of stuff. It looks like the most recent update was of May 12th through 15th, 2011. He talks about those searches as canine were brought to many fields as possible in this area surrounding Mud Creek. And this involves walking furrows in 15 to 20 foot increments. And he describes zealous increments as time consuming and quite energy intensive. But fortunately, the rain in the area received a week prior made the creek's water level high and the fields very muddy. Some progress was made, but not as much hoped for. He also, on his website, he lists some numbers, which I don't know if those are outdated, so I'm not going to give them out. He gives some articles. He even has a picture of Brandon at Canby. I guess there's a search fund. I can always give that out if it's still going. There's even a local article from my state, KSFY, who reported on the search from March 2009. There's a couple other photos, like Brandon on top of a wind tower, family, and even a picture with him and his dad. Gives out the sheriff's numbers, even gives out North American Missing Person Network and all that other stuff. I know that's not necessarily important right now, but just want to throw that out there. Let's see. But he hasn't updated it. It's not because Brandon has not been found. Obviously, it's because I don't know if they, I think they stopped the searches after a couple years. Let's see here. And by the way, I'm just doing some more research through the computer. Let's see. So as of May 14th of 2018, the Marshall Independent, which is a newspaper from Minnesota, has said that this case is still unsolved. There was another article from True Crime Files that talks about this, but you know, I don't necessarily want to talk about the theories, but we're going to go more into the theories about Brandon. The obvious theory with the rivers and all that, he may have drowned. When the searches happened, the state's Department of Natural Resources were deployed along the river and gates were installed. In some areas in Lincoln County, the water had been 10 feet deep on the morning of the disappearance, but has got, since then gone down, according to the person at the time. They have not found Brandon Swanson once again, but I guess a couple searches or whatnot, search dogs specifically on those searches, picked up the scent of human remains, specifically in the north, or the area north of Porter near Mud Creek, but just there was no body ever found. I don't necessarily, I would say, didn't use remains because human scent is obviously a really, really different thing from a decaying body. I can, or a search dog can pick up a human scent like they can pick up human remains, but it's different because a decaying, decomposing body is, or has a really bad smell. It's even really strong that we can even smell. So I really wish they didn't use human remains, because it could have been just a normal human scent from Brandon as he was just going through. Let's see. Yeah, it looks like he has not been found. Let's go to Reddit. I don't want to use Reddit for this because sometimes it's not factual. But let's see. Block the notifications from Reddit. So according to this, let's just see. So this article comes from a girl named Bethany. That's not her actual username, but this is her first post. She discovered some unknown details about the case that she couldn't keep to herself. She even has her own theory, even noting that there's already a few threads on Brandon as well as a sub, but it's not active. She goes into the case, which we're not going to go really into again. Let's see. There is supposedly a Nancy Grace segment where his mother is interviewed of supposedly only 3 minutes that seem to exist. And I can actually probably find that and try to do something with it. But she supposedly was interviewed. According to the interview, the interviewer asked, did you try to call him after that? Specifically meaning the oh shit part where, you know, the line disconnected. And Swanson said to the reporter, oh yes, we did. We did immediately hang up the phone You know, we called his name. We tried to, you know, thinking that he still had the phone, that it was very near him, that he could pick it up or that he could hear our voice. And we called out to him several times. We realized he's not there. Obviously, I think what Bethany is trying to say here with this is it's not necessarily, you know, not necessarily a good thing, but it's more of pushing the blame towards parents. And, you know, honestly, I don't want to say that they were in the right area, because I don't know if they were. You know, the Missing People's article said really nothing on if the parent or his dad found the car and whatnot. But according to your theory of what her mother or his mother said in the Nancy Grace interview, she hypothetically states that if the call was still active, but there was simply silence after the "oh shit," then his parents surely would have heard something if he had fallen in the river or had been attacked by an animal. Apparently, his father had only heard what sounded like his foot slipping, but the sound is questionable, obviously, because at the time it was a 2008 Motorola SLVR. The info seems to support that Bethany's theory is foul play. I think he saw something, according to her, that he knew and was afraid of, dropped the phone and ran. I don't really think that's possible. I'm thinking that it could have been a person, I'm not gonna lie. Like I said, we're not gonna go into the huge theories of it, but, you know, I think definitely if it was private property, it could have been possible. But at the same time, it's really hard to tell. And even at the time, you know, it was near rivers. So, according to her article still, it says on YouTube and Reddit, few people have commented by people from the area. Those people from the area supposedly claim that they've heard rumors about Brandon owing a drug debt and being found and killed by dealers. One person said that he was left in a field and ground up with cattle feet. The other said that they had heard that he's buried in one of the Dakotas, which it can be likely. Like I said, I live in South Dakota. So Marshall, let's go pull up a map really fast, which I should have done. Let's see. In the first place, let's go Marshall, Minnesota to, let's go Sioux Falls. It's Marshall, Minnesota from Sioux Falls, South Dakota is only an hour and 35 minute drive. You know, and I know that it wasn't necessarily Marshall, but we can even go to check out Linn County. Let's see. Linn County is just below Marshall. It's a little bit shorter by like 10-ish minutes. Hour 27. Let's see. Let's go back to the article from Minnesota State. Because I know it mentioned a couple of other things. Let's see. Let's go to Taunton. Which I'm not saying these theories are correct, but it's possible. Let's see. It's only an hour 40 minutes, so it's a little bit farther. But even then, you can cross over because Taunton's not that far from the South Dakota border, even rather not that far from North Dakota. But let's see. But obviously, like I said, these theories you just take with a grain of salt. But what I'm just doing is just doing some investigation. Like I said, I'm not saying that these were, you know, anything much. According to the Nancy Grace segment, there was a pipe that was found in Brandon's car. It wasn't specified what type. It just says a pipe. Despite Minnesota's website saying that there was nothing, you know, like weed or anything like that. But, you know, according to this Nancy Grace segment, according to Bethany, there was a pipe found in Brandon's car, and supposedly was confirmed on the segment. Let's see. According to at least one of the party goers, like I said, take this witness claim as a grain of salt. This is not from the authorities, but from a local that was there. Brandon was very intoxicated, and this could explain the disorientation. And the authorities claim that they didn't think he was intoxicated. According to Bethany, the party goers were being tight-lipped for a reason. Perhaps he had been accused of snitching on someone and whatnot. A couple other points that she pointed out. Brandon was taking back roads instead of the main highway, which, you know, technically, depending on where he was going, let's go from Lynn, Minnesota. To Marshall. So, ideally, Lynn, Minnesota to Marshall, Minnesota falls on Minnesota 23 East. It's actually a 10-minute drive. Okay, it's a 10-minute drive from from Lynn to Marshall, which, if we go back to the article from Minnesota's missing persons page. Let's see. Yep, he had left Lynn, Minnesota, and then headed back to Marshall. Brandon describes the location as being on a rural road outside of Lynn, about 10 miles from his parents' home. Lynn to Marshall, by the way, is, according to Google Maps, is 7.1 miles. If you take the 20th Ave in Minnesota 19 East, you have a little bit of a time difference, about 3 minutes, but the miles is 9.6. So if he did take, you know, a back route, that's probably more possible, but I don't know yet. So, in short, let's summarize what I just said. It takes 10 minutes from Lynn to Marshall, you know, just to get there. I'm not saying it's possible that he could have taken another route, which could explain roughly 10 minutes, or 10 miles, I mean, from his parents' house. Because according to the article from Minnesota's missing page, or people's page, it said that he was roughly 10 miles out from his parents' house, just outside of Lynn. And I don't think there's an actual road necessarily that I can see through the maps. But anyhow, let's continue. Which could also probably explain a huge elongated time difference, aside from the crash. If he was very intoxicated, he didn't necessarily want to crash, so he would go slower and maybe take the back routes because it's safer. Um Obviously, it's been a long time since he has disappeared. There has not been a trace since, 2010, 11, whenever the last search was. His phone nor Brandon has been discovered. The area has been searched thousands of times, it seems like. According to the Charlie Project, Brandon's car doors were opened upon discovery, which also, according to this, the IMO points strongly to foul play. So keep those things in mind. It seems very likely, one way or another, he could have been very intoxicated and then crashed. Or the other half is he was leaving the party, he crashed, and somebody got out to get him. We really don't know because we aren't Brandon. We don't know what happened to him. We weren't there, type of thing. But yeah, let me find more on that Nancy Grace segment. Sorry if I'm prolonging it. There's just really, whenever it comes to missing persons cases, like, nothing there besides what we know of. So doing a little bit of investigation, is great. So let me get this. This is a YouTube video. We're not gonna go play it probably, but I might.
HLN News and Views. Annette Swanson is joining us. She is the mother of Brandon Swanson, joining us from Minnesota. Thank you so much for joining us from Marshall, Minnesota, actually. First of all, I want to ask you, Ms. Swanson, you were on the phone with your son a large part of those early hours when you were trying to find him, and he was trying to find you. He wasn't hurt at all, right? I mean, the car went into a ditch, but he seemed to be okay.
Correct. He said he was fine, that he was not injured. And, you know, in fact, when we did find his vehicle, there was no damage to it. It was simply muddy from being on a gravel road, but no damage to the vehicle.
What was it like that night to be going through this and so close to your son, but so far from your son?
Yeah, you know, as Brandon tried to explain to us where his location was, and he was extremely sure of himself. He felt confident in where he was at, and that we were the ones that were confused about, you know, how to get to his location was.
So I went back a little bit because, you know, how, you know, the whole Bethany article. It does, the Nancy Grace segment from HLN called Americans Missing, it does confirm, supposedly, that there was a pipe found in the car. There was no beer, no blood in the car. Nothing found to indicate Brandon was impaired. So, I don't know why the authorities said there was nothing in it, but let's continue. After I get this played.
He was extremely sure of himself. He felt confident in where he was at, and that we were the ones that were confused about, you know, how to get to him. And as the conversation went on, as the minutes ticked by, you know, it came to a point where as long as Brandon was on the phone, as long as he was talking, as long as we had contact, it was okay. We would be okay. The minute that call dropped, I just became sick. I knew it was wrong. I knew it was very, very bad. And just could hardly fathom, you know, what was happening at that point.
Well, I can imagine. I mean, to take a breath. Now, when the call just hung up like that with Brandon in dire distress, I mean, those were the words that he seemed to utter when he said, oh, did you try to call him after that? And what happened?
Oh, yes, we did. You know, we We didn't immediately hang up the phone. We called his name. We tried to, thinking that he still had the phone, that it was very near him, that he could pick it up.
So I'm going to pause right there. There is a map on the segment. According to this map, Brandon was last seen approximately 13 miles, from where Brandon's cell phone was last pinged. His car was found, which the radius of it was approximately 5 miles. So, according to this map as well, just confirmed that Brandon wasn't necessarily going towards Marshall. He was just going north, northwest-ish from where his phone and his car, or his phone was last pinged, and, his car was found.
Hear our voice, and we called out to him several times, and we realized, he's not there. We called him back several times thinking, he'll see the phone light up. Even if he didn't have it on ring, he would see his phone light up when the call came in, and he'd find it. He'd answer the call, and it just didn't happen time and again. It just went unanswered.
What time did you finally call police?
I finally called the sheriff's department at approximately 6:30 in the morning.
So right when the sun was coming up.
Okay, today is June 1st.
Okay, so that's that segment of it. Like I said, I'll probably link it on my Facebook page. So without further ado, we pretty much kind of have a 2-in-1 scenario. What it could have indicated was he was high. There was no intoxication according to both the police and Nancy's segment. But at the same time, we weren't there. But what really did happen to Brandon? We gotta understand that part. What happened to him? What are the facts? What's going to lead us closer to Brandon? And if you didn't really catch that, like I said, the segment is going to be on the Facebook page After Dark Coast Ghost Killers. But without further ado, we are good, and I'll see you next time. And I'll link some other stuff on my Facebook page, like the articles and stuff like that. But see you guys next time on episode 2 of Without a Trace.